You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello and welcome to episode 117 of the Manage Mental Podcast, a weekly discussion on hot topics in the music biz for the up-and-comers, the brand newbies, the beginners, and aspiring rock stars of tomorrow. This podcast is propelled by your input and feedback, so please rate and review and leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show. I'm your host, Mr. Blasco, and as always, I am joined by my good friend, the co-host from the other coast, Mr. Mike Mowry.
What up, Blasco? Yeah, man. Good to be back on the mic with you. Always gets me excited.
Yes, it's been a minute. Mike and I have had some scheduling challenges, but we are back in the saddle. In the last episode, we chatted about building communities within your fan base. That was a really great episode, so check it out if you haven't already. This week, we talk about adapting your songwriting to fit into streaming formats. This is going to be killer, so let's get mental.
Oh, yeah.
So, Mike, I came across a heavily relevant article written by James Shotwell of Holix. And the title is How the Spotify Sound is Changing Music. And just a simple observation that that when we refer to streaming, right, we immediately equate that with Spotify. So if I talk about streaming, but I talk about it in a way to where I mention Spotify, you know that I'm referring to streaming in general. I just found that as an interesting
Yeah, definitely. And I think
subject matter.
Yeah, and I think for the genre, you know, it is so interesting. And I saw an article yesterday that, you know, Amazon Music is like the fastest growing platform and what have you. But, you know, I know my experience in the rock world and metal world. Yeah, I mean, I think of Spotify when you do say streaming. You know, I know that the other platforms exist. I think Apple Music, I probably sort of take for granted because it's, you know, been that association with Apple, which has been around forever, and iTunes. So yeah, it is. That is just a curious point for you to bring up, you know, out of the gates is there are, I mean, there's tons of other streaming platforms, but Spotify is the one that comes to mind for me.
Yep. Agreed. So it starts off like this. Spotify has disrupted the music business in many and amassed influence to the point where Spotify is shorthand for streaming itself. If that's not enough change, the way in which Spotify and other streaming platforms pay artists has fundamentally altered how some musicians are structuring their songs. So let's break it down. Spotify has revolutionized how artists make money from their music. The company pays on average between 0.006 and 0.0084 per song stream. A single stream is counted when the listener has played 30 seconds of the track. If the listener finishes the song, that's great, but it doesn't change the amount of money the stream earns for the artist. So how about that, Mike?
Yeah, and just, you know, I'm got the benefit of looking at your notes and looking at what is 0.006 to 0.0084. I mean, that's 6/10 of a cent. So it's not, you know, to 0.85, you know, 10ths of a cent. So it's not even a penny, which whatever. It almost doesn't matter at that point. I mean, you know, again, it sort of goes back to Office Space where you know, they start diverting these micro transactions and end up millionaires. So I don't want to say that it doesn't matter between 0.6 of a cent and 0.84 of a cent. Of course, the larger one is better. But yeah, as you multiply these numbers by millions and millions and millions, it makes a huge difference. So I, you know, I love you digging these things up for me, because as fluent as you and I are in the generalities of the business, you know, sometimes the weeds of particular things, I'm getting my own education session as we go here. So let me reread it for myself. A single stream is counted when the listener has played 30 seconds of a track. Great. So the listener finishes the song, that's great, but it doesn't change the amount of money that the stream earns for the artist. So I imagine as we go through the rest of these notes, it'll, that, you know, it's almost like this is setting the foundation of, okay, the real point that you need to understand here is after 30 seconds, if somebody moves on, artist, or, you know, it's hard to say this because artists might not be getting the money directly if they're signed to a label. Whoever owns the master and has it up there, they're getting paid once somebody eclipses 30 seconds. Great point. Correct. To know, right?
Correct. And, you know, it's something to point out too, that a stream, like, so when you're racking up your tally of streams, keep in mind that all platforms are different. Right? Like if you look at the difference between a YouTube video and the same video on that you put on Facebook, it's different. Facebook is racks up a view at a much quicker rate than it does on YouTube, right? And so all these platforms are different. In the case of Spotify, it is 30 seconds. So that stream will count, right? And you will get paid accordingly once the listener listens to 30 seconds. So if the point here is that if your song isn't engaging within the first 30 seconds, you're going to have a problem. And the fact of the matter is that a 45 second song versus a 5 minute song, if the listener gets to the first 30 seconds, the pay is the same. Does that make sense?
Now, I don't know the answer to this, but I'm assuming. Well, I mean, what happens if you jump in? Let's say, you know, the new band, or, you know, band has a new album. The intro is a minute and the banger part of the track comes in right at a minute. And what happens if I love the songs, the only place that I listen to is on Spotify, and I skip that first minute, but always go to the, you know, whatever, as I'm scrubbing, you know, the controller, either on my phone or on my computer, and I get to a minute and then play to a minute 30. Do you know? I don't know the answer to this. Do you know if that still counts because it's 30 seconds, or is it?
I do not know, but predictably, I would think that if it's 30 consecutive seconds.
Okay. I would agree as well. I would presume that as well. So interesting, you know, point. That said, most people aren't going to listen to music that way. Like, oh, hey, let me skip right to this point. You know, it's, we go on, we hit play. If you're impatient like me, sometimes you skip ahead, but I'm not going to, you know, I'd rather just, take a sip of coffee during that first minute.
For sure. So with this in mind, it's easy to understand why many industry experts claim Spotify has changed the sound of music. The Spotify sound, as it has been dubbed, refers to artists who waste no time getting to the heart of their song. The days of lengthy introductions or slow-burning tracks has been replaced by immediate choruses or other attention-grabbing tactics.
Yeah, you know, there's the old adage, don't bore us, get to the chorus. Mm. And, you know, this isn't the first time that it's been, you know, proposed that a method of consumption has changed music. Obviously, you know, radio before streaming did a very similar thing. That's why your radio singles and your radio hits or what have you, you know, are pretty simple format. Verse, chorus, you know, bridge, chorus. Cool. We're done. 3 minutes or less, and we've got ourselves a radio hit in the making, provided that you've got a banger of a chorus. And so I do appreciate it. I mean, it is a very just interesting concept here. And yeah, as you said, it's like, what are the attention grabbing tactics? What's going to get the listener to hold on? And what I like about this is, you know, James, who is a really smart guy, I've had the pleasure of getting to know him over the years. You know, this can't be taken in a silo. Like, you can't isolate it and have it be the only thing that's affecting, you know, music as a whole. It is like sort of this drilled down point that maybe people aren't even necessarily realizing is happening. Maybe some are, but it's like, as, yeah, just things kind of morph and change, you know, the leaders of the pack who are doing it, there's bound to be tons and tons of followers. And so, you know, I think what I've seen in other, you know, sort of trend setting, and this is sort of this broader global sort of trend setting thing, is, yeah, I mean, it in some senses it is changing the scope of music. You know, in other senses, it's like, okay, you know, is that still just going to apply to kind of some of the single stuff, especially in the genres we work in? And I think you and I, you know, who manage artists, would advise it's got to be good regardless. You know, attention grabbing is great for a minute, but we've watched, you know, artists try to grab attention through gimmicks and tricks, and usually that light fades pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, look, from the artistic values of a band, right, as songwriters and as artists, I mean, I feel like, you know, they all resonate with the fantasy of In Bohemian Rhapsody whenever they tell the record label, this is our song, this is the single, it's 6 minutes, if you don't like it, shove it up your ass. And then to take that all the way to the gigantic win that Bohemian Rhapsody became, right? I feel like that's something that the true internal artist resonates with to such a degree. However, that is a once in a lifetime scenario that happened, and we are just living in a different world. So, you know, Spotify as a platform is really geared towards singles, and as a consumer base, it's a playlist generation. It doesn't really treat the album as art. Doesn't mean that you cannot make an artistic album and still treat that as a piece of art. But I think potentially what is the picture that's being painted here is that if you want to play the game, you got to have, you know, you got to have the ball, like you got to have the correct ball. And so it's like, if you want to create art, that's great. But if you want people to hear your music and share your music and playlist your music on this particular platform, you might need to consider doing an edit of sort or write a song specifically with these factors in mind, right? So moving on, another element of the Spotify sound is the length of a song, which again is a result of the company's approach to compensating talent. If a play is counted after 30 seconds of listening time, then artists are not incentivized to make longer songs. The more financially informed approach would be to record more material that is shorter, thus earning more money. A 5-minute song earns as much as a 2-minute song, but listeners can play multiple 2-minute songs in the same amount of time, which means they can earn more money.
Yeah, I mean, definitely at face value, this point is spot on. You know, the question is, do you have two great songs that people are going to spend 30 seconds listening to? And I think that's the only, you know, because we do a podcast, which I'm not going to say we critique what these guys say, we analyze it. And in analyzation, sometimes playing devil's advocate, you and I do, or I do, and you know, and then you can voice your opinion. It's you know, essentially that's part of the gig here. And so that's the, you know, I just want to point out the sort of caveats to any of this. I mean, yeah, if you and I were to record two bangers, you know, mm-hmm. that crap, we can go back to the grindcore days. You know, it's like, I'm curious what happens if you have a 15 second song, right?
Well, like, yeah, if you're DOI, what happens?
Yeah. And it's like, okay, but we'll disregard the pink elephants and stick with, you know, part of what we're doing is providing a platform where aspiring artists who, yeah, are kind of trying to play the game. I love the way you said it. If you're going to play the game, you got to have the right ball. And, you know, I think it is great food for thought when writing a really long song. That said, you know, most of the time, unless it is a Bohemian Rhapsody or is some really outlier, most bands are, you know, that I've worked with and seem to be unwilling to take. No, I should frame it differently. Oftentimes bands get married to too many songs because they're just not too long of songs because they're not skilled songwriters. It doesn't mean that they're not skilled riff makers. It doesn't mean that they're not capable of creating interesting and sometimes great music. It just means that when it comes down to chopping it up and leaving some stuff on the cutting room floor or the practice pad floor, that is a skill that only comes from, you know, learning that particular skill. And so, you know, many bands, and mind you, many bands who have 5-minute songs, sometimes, you know, the fans, especially in metal, you know, if that's the genre that we're talking about, rock and metal, hey, we've been trained to appreciate longer songs because we like artists to have some space to play, you know, very different riffs and incorporate different atmospheric elements or whatever it may be that extends the length of a song. Sometimes we value that because it is different than the cookie cutter, again, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. So just kind of fascinating as a whole. I don't know if I have a point, you know, a streamlined point other than it's very interesting to look at it for this one platform. But my advice would be don't allow it to dictate too much, you know, of what you're trying to do in order to write great music.
For sure. And he continues, other platforms have different rules for what counts as a play. Some services require a certain percentage of the song to be enjoyed before a play is counted, while others have a higher minimum for time spent listening. Both methods of counting plays encourage the same thing. Artists should make shorter, catchier songs if they want to earn big from streaming services.
Ah, crap. So right when I feel like I got it, we got to worry about these other platforms as well. But that's the modern music business. And, you know, I think Blasco and my advice, and one of the reasons why I think we work well together in giving you aspiring musicians and even you established musicians that tune in is, you know, this is one part of a global component. And I don't mean global in the sense of traveling around the world. I mean, you know, global in terms of a comprehensive approach to how to maximize your various streams of income. You know, I think you and I would both say, hey, look, if you've got lengthy songs and they're great and you may not, you know, have millions and millions of people listening to them, but the hundreds of thousands of people that are listening to them are very loyal and are going to come support you when you're playing live and when they're going to buy your t-shirts and they're going to buy these other products that are additional streams of income, that has to be factored in. But inevitably, you pointed out, look, you know, consumption is changing. You know, again, radio, though the album was still very much a focus because typically the only way, unless you were buying a single, you know, was to get the hit that you heard on the radio or the banger that you saw when they played live, you had to buy the whole album. And so the joke was on you. You know, if it was only one good song, you'd spend 10 times as much. You know, in this economy, you know, you're able to go in and hone in, and that does prioritize singles, sort of in the way, you know, it's a gateway. If you've got one great song that's indicative, you know, that'll lure somebody in, you know, hopefully, and you and I know I've done it. I hear something that I'm totally surprised by, a band that, I don't know, wow, what is this? And then I go check the album out. And inevitably, if there's more great songs, I do go back to the album and not just listen to one single over and over again.
Yeah. So it's interesting that form follows function, in that if you're an artist and you're a songwriter, and you think back to the days whenever we only had vinyl records and cassettes, you would write and you would build your album around two sides, right? Because you flip the cassette over and you flip the vinyl over. And so you would structure it in a way to where side one encompassed an X amount of feel, and then side two had sometimes a different type of feel, but you structured it in a way to where, like, this will be the first song on side two, right? And it was interesting. Then as we progressed into CDs, you no longer had sides. So you had to think of it in terms of how an album was structured without there being an intermission in the middle. And so you had to think of it as a complete story from start to finish. And then there was also, too, a bit of that of like, well, a CD holds 85 minutes, so we have to fill up the CD with as much content as possible so that it's of value to the consumer. Now we're in a different world where we're in a singles-based streaming business, and it has clearly disrupted successfully the song structure. So potentially the suggestion here is you have to consider this when writing songs, or on the flip side, maybe what you have to do is, as we had back in the day, Mike, is we had radio edits whenever radio was a very big and prominent thing. If you had a 5-minute single, you would edit it down to the sweet spot of 3 minutes and 30 seconds max. Now it looks like we have to consider the streaming edit, something that is in the realm of 2 to 2.5 minutes, starts with the chorus, you know, get rid of the intro, get rid of the fluff, focus on the strong points, and maybe that is the ticket to where this isn't the version of the song, but it is the Spotify single version of the song. And that may be a real struggle for artists as songwriters to wrap their head around, but I look at it as a challenge, right? Like this is the game we're playing. And so as a songwriter, don't look at this as a negative. Look at it as a challenge. That's my 2 cents.
Yeah, and two things I'll add, and what a fun episode. You know, the first is, you know, and actually maybe I only have one, but have you had any conversations with artists that are making records that have distinctly said, okay, here we are in a streaming economy, let's structure our song a certain way?
I have recently. Okay. A band sent me their album. And they're not a client of mine. They're just friends. And I really, like, I'm a fan. And they sent me their album, and then they go, hey man, you know, this is going to come out next year. You know, tell us what you think or whatever. And then they told me that this song was the single. I listened to the record and I went back to him and I go, that song isn't the single. This other song is the single, and let me explain to you why. And then I actually referenced this particular article, and I sent it to him, and I go, maybe take a minute to take this song and do an edit accordingly to the suggestions here. Cut out the intro, right? Cut out some of the bridge, focus on what the hook is, and make this, you know, make this the streaming single. So I actually have very recently had that conversation.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it goes because I haven't had those conversations to date. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess the other thing that I was going to say is, look, one of the reasons we do this is, you know, Blasco and I thrive on the feedback that we get from others. So if you're out there listening and you've had experience with this, you know, if you've started to think about it, whether you're, you know, in a band or work at a label or, you know, are a prominent attorney in the business, we'd love to hear from you guys in regards to how this stuff is applying or not applying in your approach to, your career. So
here's my parting gift for anyone that is willing to do this. So a lot of this topically comes from the Lil Nas X song, Old Town Road. Don't know if you're familiar with this song, Mike, but it is a pop urban country crossover song done by an artist named Lil Nas X that had a country performer sing the hook of the track. The original track is 2 minutes long, I think, or maybe even a little under 2 minutes. And then the remix that's getting a lot of traction is 2 minutes and 35 seconds, right? But this is probably the single most popular song in pop culture right now. And not only that, it is a distinct example of the disruption that that this article is talking about, because that song is structured specifically to the guidelines of this article. So now my tip is the first band that does a heavier version of that song and puts it out in the into the streaming services is going to benefit greatly.
I love it. That's awesome. Pro tip from Blasco coming at you.
Yep. Cover that song. Do it right now. Don't even think about it. Anyway, that concludes episode 117. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back here next week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Blasco1313. We encourage you to email us any questions or comments you may have for the podcast to me directly at askblasco@gmail.com. If you have listened thus far, much respect to you for making efforts to educate yourselves and taking your future into your own hands. Mike, any final parting thoughts?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mike O'Loop. And shout out to my boy, James Shotwell. And if you guys are looking on additional ways to take your career to the next level, check out the products that we offer over at OuterLoopCoaching.com.
Yeah. Peace. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.